Welcome to Backline Banter. Today, a massive episode. Of course, we have the Premier League summary for game week 28 and, of course, the Liverpool experience. A massive game, Liverpool versus Man City. I'll talk about that first very soon. We also have the deep Darwin dive and some blind ranking of Liverpool and Manchester City players. Liverpool 1, Manchester City 1. Overall, a very close game in general. Manchester City probably having the better first half, but Liverpool definitely having the better second. Now, going into this game, like I said last episode with my prediction, I predicted a 2-1 win for Liverpool. So, not far off it at all, and I'm going to talk about it a lot more today. We definitely should have got another one and won the game for us, but it didn't work out this way, and we do take a draw considering all our players that we have out and City's team. As overall, and especially in the second half, I thought we absolutely killed it. Before I start talking about the game, I will run through the lineups and do a bit like I did in the Chelsea versus Liverpool Carabao Cup final, and just match up each position with another and give a point to which player is better in that position to kind of overall, I guess, see who had the better lineup going into the game. The two goalkeepers, of course, Liverpool, Kelleher, Manchester City, Edison. Now, it's going to be based on form and a bit overall. So I take both into consideration, mainly the form of how they've been playing recently instead of overall, because we're talking about the best lineup for this game. So to be honest, I think at the moment, Kelleher is better than Edison. Of course, overall, yeah, that's not the case. Edison, a lot more experienced, a lot better with the ball at his feet. But I think the form Kelleher is in at the moment, he's genuinely one of the best keepers in the world, really fully replacing Alisson and stepping into the form that Alisson was in prior to his injury. And Kelleher absolutely shining. So currently at the moment, I would say Liverpool 1-0 up. Kelleher better than Edison at the moment. Now, City did play a 3 at the back with Ake, Akanji, Walker. And Liverpool, of course, a 4 at the back. Bradley, Quansah, Van Dijk and Gomez. So I'll try and pair them up as much as I can. I might even just drop Stones, who played a lot as a CDM, just as a centre back, so I can match them up pretty fairly. So left back for Liverpool, Joe Gomez, and left centre back for City, Nathan Ake. Now, again, form. I do think Gomez is in better form. Overall, I think you could definitely argue Ake, but form at the moment, Gomez killing it at left back, even starting ahead of Robertson. That just shows you how well he has done in the position. And he played brilliantly at left back. And then when Robertson came onto the pitch for Bradley, played well at right back. Absolute top quality performance from him. And we needed it with some big players out. So definitely deserves some plaudits for his performance against City. And current form, I do think Gomez is better than Ake. So 2-0 Liverpool. Centre back for City, Akanji. And centre back for Liverpool, Quansah. Again, I'm going to be talking about every Liverpool player when I run through this lineup and how they play it as well. Quansah, the young 21-year-old, absolutely smashed it. Of course, there were some doubts in my mind, just slightly, that Kanate out, it's going to be a bit shaky. And people did actually predict Gomez slot into that centre back role and play Robertson left back. But I did think, give Quansah his chance. I was, of course, a little bit more worried because Kanate, just so much more experience and overall better, which you, of course, expect. But Quansah absolutely smashed it in his role. He really did. So solid, so calm on the ball, and did exactly what we needed. Just another player in this lineup that really stepped up for us. And to be honest, everyone on the pitch played a brilliant game, and I cannot fault any single one of them. But overall, current form, who do I think is better, Akanji or Quansah? I do have to say Akanji. I do believe Quansah has the potential to be a lot better than Akanji, but at the moment, you've got to say Akanji is better. So 2-1 Liverpool. Right back for us, Connor Bradley, and right centre back for City, Kyle Walker. Now, of course, we talk about form, and recently, Bradley, well, not recently, since he's been starting for Liverpool, absolutely smashed it in the right back role in place of Trent Alexander-Arnold. This game, I thought he played really well. Wasn't one of his best games, but against City, you can't really do as many attack and runs, and you are kind of sitting back because he did have to defend against Alvarez. And looking at it now, I can't think of a time where Alvarez really was an impact in City's attack or affected it, Bet Bradley. So he definitely did his job, that's for sure. And with such a big game, you don't want to step in the middle, lose the ball, and then it be your fault. So he smashed it. But who's better overall, current form as well, play into it, Bradley or Kyle Walker? Well, it's got to be Kyle Walker, really, hasn't it? No questions asked. So 2-2. The last defender, of course, Virgil van Dijk and John Stones. Now, this one's a simple one for me. Van Dijk, of course, is better. Stones did play pretty well and, of course, got the goal, which I'll talk about later on. But van Dijk, so solid, kept Haaland so quiet. And again, that is something I'm going to talk about a little bit more on later on in a little bit. So definitely 3-2 to Liverpool. Endo versus Rodri, the both defensive, the main defensive midfielders for the teams, for their respective team. Of course, I'm going to have to say that Rodri is better because form and overall, he's just top quality. You cannot disregard him. But I do think Endo has a massive shout to be in the question of it. Of course, he doesn't have as much evidence, you know, as much to show as Rodri does, because him being in that City team for years and playing top quality football. But Endo, since coming into Liverpool and since starting, has done exceptionally well, really. Just to think, we bought him for about 35 mil from Stuttgart, and he just slots perfectly into that defensive midfield role. McAllister was in that role before when he wasn't in the squad holding, but McAllister, he's just not born to do that kind of thing. He's not an out-and-out defensive midfielder, where Endo is exactly that. And yeah, his current form is on fire. So solid, wins the ball. At the start of his career at Liverpool, I thought there were a fair few times where he held the ball a bit too long, got it taken off him, looking for fouls that weren't there, and I questioned him a little bit, I did. But he's found his rhythm, and he is a perfect midfielder in that midfield three for Liverpool. Played an absolute ripper of a game against City. But like I said, you got to give it to Rodri, the experience, and overall better. So 3-3. For one of the centre mids, Bernardo Silva compared to McAllister. Now, this one is a close one, I'll tell you that. Bernardo Silva, top quality for so many years. His dribbling, passing, just everything about him is insane. Just, yeah, so much quality. But McAllister has been so good for us this season. It has been inspirational, that's for sure. So many games this season, he stepped up and played such a good performance overall. You just think too, like, if I've said he's so quality, then when's the last time he played very well? Last Europa game, slotted a penalty, played solid, did what he needs to do. Game before that, Forrest got the final assist to Darwin Nunez, and again, played brilliantly in that midfield three. And this game, oh, again, all the players played well, all the midfield, the back line, the forward line. McAllister, insane, just like everyone on the day. Of course, he got the goal from the penalty spot, took up and slotted it home. Seeming like Liverpool's second penalty taker. Of course, Salah wasn't on the pitch at the time, so he took it. And overall, I've got to say, McAllister is better than Bernardo Silva. So 4-3. The last midfielders for both teams, De Bruyne and Szoboszlai. Both amazing. And Szoboszlai played very well. Well, I don't need to say this about every player, do I really? Because they all played well. Good attacking. Did get taken off in the 61st minute. And yeah, what a signing he has been for us. I remember seeing the talks of that we're going to sign Szoboszlai, and I didn't mind it. But I just had that thought in my mind that he's a lot more of an attacking player. Is he going to suit our three midfield line? And he does exactly. His work rate, phenomenal. And the power he can get on his shot is crazy. But of course, we are comparing him, in my opinion, and this is very debatable, the best Premier League midfielder of all time. And with that said, De Bruyne is better than Szoboszlai, so that makes it 4-4. For the right wings, Foden up against Harvey Elliott. Now, another man who deserves plaudits, and to be fair, I have given it to him recently. Harvey Elliott absolutely smashing it for us, been so good off the bench, and now starting frequently because of Salah's injury, absolutely killing it for us. Again, played amazing, but when you're getting put up against Phil Foden, which you could argue the best young talent, it's got to go Foden. Both absolute top quality young players, but Phil Foden at the moment and in the form he is, some argue at the moment he's the best Premier League player, and it is hard to argue that point. So that makes it 5-4 to City. Left winger kind of positions, Luis Diaz up against Alvarez. Now, I think Alvarez, top quality, really good player, but I did think in the game he was quite quiet in general and just didn't really have that impact that he usually does against teams. Whereas Diaz, I may as well talk about him in general. He's such a top quality player, but I do have to say this game, I thought he definitely wasn't at his best, and I think he definitely knows that as well. Got himself in some great opportunities, but missed the target and just didn't get his final pass right for the most part. And with a game so close and you need to take your chances, he did kind of let us down. But his determination, his hard work, it is there. It was just his final product. You know, his heart completely in it, but possibly just a lack of concentration. The nerves get him. It might have, because the chances he did have, we'll talk about them later on when we're talking about all the chances in the game. I do think another game he slots him, and I do believe that he can slot him, and that's what makes him such big misses and why I'm talking about him, because I think 90% of the time he finishes those chances, but today it just wasn't his day really, and definitely could have at least got a brace, you know, got us the winning goal, but sadly it wasn't to be. Of course, like I said, an absolute top quality player, and everyone has games like that. There's no point to linger from them. You learn and you move on. Simple as that. But yeah, it is just a little bit irritating that could have won us the game, but it didn't fall, and oh well. Overall, I do have to say Diaz is better than Alvarez. Of course, Alvarez, very good young talent, but Diaz overall and the form he's been in the past few games, very good, so that makes it 5-5. And it is coming down to the wire. Of course, this isn't completely on whoever has the highest points, has the better team, because obviously we're just on position by position. We're not also putting in account the team chemistry, but it's just a fun little activity we can do. And I enjoy it, and it's a good way to talk about each player and the performance I thought they gave on the game. But it has gone down to the last player, the two strikers, Darwin Nunez up against Erling Haaland. Of course, overall, you got to say Haaland's better. But bringing into account the form these two have been, Nunez, it takes it for me. He does. I thought he played pretty well. He really did. When he got the ball, he tried to do something with it. And the one thing I could say, and I will touch about this a little bit more in the deep Darwin dive, is that I wish he got the ball a bit more and that, but played solid, did his job, was hoping for just that bit of extra brilliance, pull something out of the bag. But of course, I've got to back my boy Darwin Nunez over Haaland. And I'll touch on Haaland's performance now as well. I didn't even know he played the game. Genuinely, he was in Van Dijk's pocket the whole game, completely ghosted for City, and just shows you. Of course, he's a top quality player. His positions is great. His physical is great. And his shooting as well, of course. But he does have a bit of an occasion for big games to go missing. Well, at least against Liverpool, that's for sure. And looking at the stats, he had 22 touches the whole game. To put it in a bit of perspective, Mo Salah, who came on in the 61st minute, got 27 touches. 5 more than Erling Haaland, who played the whole game. And yeah, you got to give your props to Van Dijk. Absolutely pocketed him. But of course, Haaland completely ghosted the game. I think a lot of people thought before the game started that Haaland would stay on Kwanzaa a lot more and try and put him under pressure. But Van Dijk just didn't allow that and made sure he was always on Haaland and Kwanzaa being that free man. And yeah, stinky game from Haaland. And I mean, I called it in my prediction, didn't I? I said, Haaland, he is going to be nowhere in the game. I don't remember the exact words I used, but it was somewhere along the lines of he's going to ghost and do absolutely nothing. So with that said, 6-5 to Liverpool, position by position, I think Liverpool had the better team. But of course, looking at it in an overall perspective, including, you know, chemistry, the team bonding and all that, how long they've been playing together, overall, Manchester City definitely having the better team. And of course, the bench, so much better for them. I'll quickly run through the benches for both teams. For Liverpool, Robertson, Salah, Gakpo, Adrian, Tsimikas, Nalo, Clark, McConnell, and Kumis. For City, Ortega, Kovacic, Doku, Diaz, Gvardiol, Nunez, Rico Lewis, Gomez, and Oscar Bob. So you can tell by those names, Man City having so much more depth. Really, the only massive players for Liverpool, Robertson, Salah, and Gakpo, and all of them did come on. So yeah, of course, overall, Man City with the better team. But Liverpool, they just dig deep. Of course, both teams wanted it, but on the day, I thought Liverpool played better. Sadly, didn't get the result to show for that. Just a draw. Like I said at the start, I did think Man City had a better first half, but Liverpool came out that second half and absolutely killed them. So many chances, but just couldn't put it away. Talking about the bench, I'll run you through the subs for the game. So for Liverpool, the 61st minute, there was a double change. Robertson on for Bradley and Mo Salah on for Szoboszlai. So of course, Robertson slotted in at left back, pushing Gomez over into right back. And Salah came on in the right wing position, pushing Harvey Elliott into Szoboszlai's role as that midfielder, bit more attacking. Then in the 76th minute, Gakpo came on for Darwin Nunez. I'll talk about this a bit more in the deep Darwin dive, but that is all the subs we used, only 3. And to be honest, I think that was the right call. There wasn't any really extra boost we could have brought on. So good calls by Klopp. For City, the 56th minute, Ortega came on for Edison. Edison gave away the penalty for Liverpool. And in doing so, he injured himself. It seemed like he did something to his quad or his hammy. It just seemed like he kind of jarred a bit. And straight away, he was kind of like, ooh, it's not good. And he had some time to recover and then try and save the pen. But a few minutes later, it was still no good and got subbed off for Ortega. In the 69th minute, a double change. Kovacic for Kevin De Bruyne. And wow, Kevin De Bruyne, he had a pretty big sook. He came off, shake of the head, talking to Pep Guardiola. He didn't even want to give him a hug. He talked to him, a bit of an argue, probably something along the lines of, why wouldn't you keep me out there? If you did, I would have played this part, da-da-da-da, you know, break him down. But no player is bigger than the club. No player is bigger than the manager. He makes his mind up. As much as you don't agree with it, you've just got to accept it. And to be honest, something you don't expect from such an experienced player and so professional, him coming off and visibly showing that he was not happy about it. Because I'm sure there's a fair few players who get subbed off, not happy about it, but they act cool about it. After the game, they'll talk to the manager one-on-one. But he visually showed his emotions. And come on, I know you're a massive player. And if you stayed on, possibly you could have given City a goal to give him the win, because such a massive attacking threat. His passes, wow, second to none. Like I said, I think he's the best Premier League midfielder of all time. But you've just got to take you getting subbed on the chest and move on, really. The other change in the 69th minute, Doku on for Alvarez. I thought that was a very good decision. Alvarez didn't do a lot in the game, like I said. So bring on some fresh leg. Someone who's a big threat attacking-wise, and Doku definitely was. So just three changes for both sides. Klopp's changes I thought were really good. Pep's changes I also thought were very good. So into the chances for the game. The first real massive one, 18th minute. McAllister played the ball through to Darwin Nunez, who squared it up to Diaz to tap it into an empty net. But sadly, Darwin was offside, so no goal. A good run from him, but just too quick from him. Then in the 22nd minute, Bernardo Silva running down the left. He whips in a ball. It's going to Haaland, back post, but Van Dijk does beautifully to jump and guide the ball out of play and head of the ball out for a corner. Now, with that corner, De Bruyne takes it. And as we know, this is where City scores. He takes it front post. Stones gets there and gets it in near post. Looking at it, when I first saw it, I didn't think it went in. I thought he hit it wide, but I saw him running off in celebrations and I went, oh no. A good set piece play from him and a good execution by Stones, but a massive talking point on this. So he got a pretty free run to the front post because the man in front of him was McAllister. So McAllister was in front of him. He had Nathan Ake to the left of him in an offside position. When the ball was taken, Ake kind of shepherded and blocked McAllister to cover that front post, giving Stones the space to run into it and tap it in. And now I wouldn't even be bringing this up unless we remember the game Chelsea v Liverpool Carabao Cup final when Van Dijk scored in normal time, but it got ruled off for offside because Endo was offside and kind of blocked Shepherd Levi Colwell from him stopping to run onto Van Dijk to possibly stopping him. I mean, we talk about consistency and that wasn't consistent. Ake offside intervenes with McAllister, stops him from possibly stopping the ball going into him in at that front post, but it doesn't get given. So, of course, if that Van Dijk goal scored and Endo's offside, it wasn't offside, then fair enough, it's a goal. And I do think that's fine. You know, game's a game. But since we got penalised for doing that in the Carabao Cup final, then City do it to us in this massive game. Well, there's just no consistency, is there? And it should have been pulled for offside. VAR should have seen it just like they did in the Chelsea-Liverpool game, but the goal's given. All I want is consistency. I don't care if the referees are consistently bad, but they've just got to be consistent. And that just wasn't. Very annoying, as that was City's only goal. Something so small from a corner and that offside happening, but still being given. So, you know, it happens. But I did call it in my prediction. City score from a corner. One of the defenders, I did say either Diaz or Ake, and it was Stones. So pretty close on that front. But like I said, it should have been called for offside, but they got given it. So Stones scores in the 23rd minute. One of Diaz's chances in the game, the first half, 41st minute, just before halftime, gets the ball, takes a touch inside, beats his defender, takes a shot and it's just wide. It's looking like it's goal bound, but just wide. And this is what I'm talking about. He's so good to get himself the opportunity, but the finish just missed. But to be fair to him, this chance, didn't expect him to score. Did really well to give himself the opportunity. And so close, but wide. Then the second half, Liverpool absolutely come out firing, as you'd expect. But you do think City will hold us a little bit more than they did, but completely dominant in that second half, especially at the start. And of course, it leads to Liverpool's press being so well. Ake plays a ball back to the keeper, but doesn't put enough on it and just allows Nunez to absolutely sprint on the ball. He just gets there first and Edison fouls him. Beautiful pressure by Nunez. So smart to realize that opportunity absolutely uses his pace to get there first and win us a penalty in the first minute of the second half. But like I said before, Edison did get injured from it, so it did take a few minutes for him just to recover. So McAllister didn't take the penalty until the 50th minute, and wow, slots it top left past Edison, never in doubt, and give us the start we exactly needed. 61st minute, Salah on the pitch now, plays a beautiful ball to break the line to Luis Diaz, who's onside, takes a touch, goes for the shot, should bury it into that right-hand corner, but puts it wide. A massive, massive chance. What a ball from Salah. Beautiful touch from Diaz. Perfectly weighted. Brings the keeper out a bit and doesn't allow Kyle Walker to get him, but just tries to bend it into the right-hand corner, but puts too much on it and sends it wide. So, so close, and it should have been our second goal, but just wide. 72nd minute. Absolute wild thing happens. Ake whips a ball into the box, which Kelleher comes out to it, punches it out, but punches it onto what it looked like the head of Foden, then onto the crossbar, just missing. But on the replay, it came straight off his hand onto the crossbar. So even if it somehow dipped down and went in, it would have been ruled out for handball. City still looking like they can get back into the game. Still looking to get some chances going, but no goal comes from it. Although 88th minute, Haaland plays a ball to Doku, who's on the right. He's got a long way to go. Gomez in front of him, does some good dribbling. Gomez does well to defend him as well, but possibly gives him just that little bit too much space. And he takes a shot and hits the post right at the end. So close. It even hit more the inside than the outside. It bounced straight back to Kelleher. Kelleher so fortunate to see that bounce back straight to him. And Doku so close to winning City the game. 93rd minute though, we put it into the back of the net, but Salah's offside. He just went a bit too early, played the ball across to Gakpo, who he should have absolute buried first time, but his first time shot hits the crossbar, bounces back to Harvey Elliott and puts it into the net. But Salah just went too quickly, so close. A corner in the 97th minute, right at the end of the game. There were 8 minutes added on. It just flicked over to the 98th minute. A corner got whipped in. The ball gets cleared out just a little bit. It bounces up and Doku puts a high leg in to get the ball and also catches McAllister. VAR has a look at it, but they do not give the penalty. And I've got to say, penalties these days are given for such soft things, even the slightest touch of the heel. And to be honest, a lot of them I see, I think, you're not even really feeling that. Like, you can easily run, continue running in the box and take your shot, but they just dive down. And this one, well, it's such a high foot. Yes, he gets a bit of the ball, but he also gets McAllister. And if it was given, it is a bit harsh, but it definitely should have been a penalty because, like I was saying, the littlest of touches gives you penalties these days. So that definitely should have. A high boot gets McAllister in the chest. Yes, it might have been very slight, but he still gets him nonetheless. Should have given us another penalty in the 98th minute for Salah to step up and score it, but it's not given, and that's what I'm talking about, the consistency. Any other game, I reckon that gets called, and especially if it's for a big team against a little team, 100%. But such a big game, they didn't want to make a big call and just left it at 1-1. Should have went our way, to be completely honest. VAR absolutely had a mare, was definitely in City's favour, didn't rule out Stones' offside goal and didn't give us a penalty here. The worst thing of all is we should have already been up a goal before that penalty shout, whether it be Diaz or Nunez, just someone should have put it in the back of the net already. But it just didn't fall that way and we didn't get the penalty and it finished all square 1-1. Klopp after the game said in his interview, definitely should have been a penalty. He was 100% sure it should have been given, and He really didn't know why it wasn't. Overall, we played phenomenally and really, like I've said 1,000 times by now probably, we should have got the win. But with us not having our full strength team and City definitely having theirs, we did exceptionally well. All the players stepping up, putting in big performances, and we couldn't have lost that game, so at least we got the draw. But what a game in general. It was so enjoyable to watch. Of course, a bit frustrating at times with our missed chances, but nah, it was insane. And oh, mate, it would have topped it up so much for a last-minute penalty winner, but sadly, it just didn't go our way. But 1-1, we do take in terms of the squad we had and the squad they had. If it was full strength team, we definitely should have won. And even now, we should have won. But now all we need is for Arsenal to drop points. And hopefully when Arsenal and Man City play, Manchester beat them. Because of course, Arsenal now do go top of the Premier League with their win against Brentford. They're on 64 points, just like us. But they have a 7-goal better goal difference on positive 46. To our positive 39. So they're in first at the moment. Man City 1 point behind us in third. So a perfect result for the Gunners. What a title race this is turning out to be. Absolutely thrilling for neutrals, for fans of the top teams. Wow, it is going to be close. So that's why you got to give me a follow. Stick around the podcast because all the episodes leading up to the end of the season are going to be massive. So Liverpool 1, Manchester City 1 in the end. Massive first v second battle. Nothing separating the two sides. Arsenal 2, Brentford 1. Of course, like I just said, with their win, it did put them top of the table. And with City and Liverpool drawing, it kept them on top. But Brentford did not make it easy for them. And to be honest, Brentford seemed to be a little bit of a bogey team, you could say. A lot of close results in the past. At Brentford's ground, it was 1-0. In the EFL Cup, it was 1-0 to Arsenal. Last season in the Premier League, it was 1-1. So very close game. Brentford always pushing Arsenal. So into the highlights. Saka has the ball on the right. He played it back to Ben White, who takes a touch, crosses it to the head of Declan Rice, and he puts it away to make it 1-0 in the 19th minute. A big chance for Arsenal in the 34th minute. Rice picks a beauty of a ball over the top to Havertz, who's onside. He's on one-on-one with the keeper in the box, tries to chip him, but misses the target completely and goes wide. Do expect him to do better and put it on target with his chip, but I guess they can't do it like Darwin Nunez. Then, the big talking point of the game. Now, of course, Arsenal playing Brentford. David Raya, their number one keeper, is, of course, on loan from Brentford, so he cannot play any game against the Bees. So, of course, Ramsdale steps in for this game, and oh, you hate to see him because I do like him, and you hate to see it. So, right at the end of the first half, Gabriel plays it back to Ramsdale and he's got time to pass it and he's got a very easy pass to Ben White to his right, but he just holds it too long and then he finally kicks it, but Wissa absolutely sprinting and slides in, gets to the ball, Ramsdale kicked it, bounced off Wissa into the goal, and this just seems to be the big problem. Ramsdale seems to always come into the games when he does get played and just tries to prove himself too much by holding the ball a bit too long, trying to maybe play some long balls over the top and getting them cut out. And I do believe this is what happened here. He sees the easy option, but he just goes, can I do something more? Can I do something better? This possibly, if I keep doing these really good passes and don't just do the simple one, I could win back my spot. But it just makes it even harder for Arsenal to win these games, making it 1-1. And just like Liverpool and City, they cannot afford to drop points. Every game for them is a crucial one. I mean, people have different opinions on it, but I think it was not the right choice for Mikel Arteta bringing in two brilliant goalkeepers. I think you've either got to get Raya, get rid of Ramsdale, or never get Raya and keep Ramsdale. Because as we see, Ramsdale gets played and, you know, it's in his head. He wants to do so much more, so many unnecessary things, and proves costly for the Gunners. But in the second half, Arsenal did find it very difficult to find a winner. But in the 86th minute, Odegaard slips the ball to Ben White, whips it into the box, and Havertz gets on the end of it and, of course, heads it home. Flecken, very unlucky though. He got a touch on it, but it just wasn't enough to tip it over the bar and keep it out of the goals. So the game does end 2-1, but I also want to include this chance by Tony, and it could have also embarrassed Ramsdale again. So at the start of the second half, about, he gets a ball flicked out wide to him and it bounces a couple times, and then he absolutely laces it at goal. He's so far out, just above the halfway line, because with those two bounces, he looked up, he looked around, no options on, so saw Ramsdale off his line and went for it. And I tell you what, he was so close. It was beautiful technique, dipping down. Had the power on it. Ramsdale had to jump high and get a hand on it to save it. But Tony, so alive. What a player. And Ramsdale nearly embarrassed again. But with Arsenal's win, it now makes it 8 Premier League wins in a row. A decent performance by Arsenal. Brentford did make it hard, of course. And Ramsdale making it even harder for him. But did what they needed to do and finish 2-1. Another big game this game week. Chelsea versus Newcastle. 10th versus 11th. And you've got to say, at the start of the season, you would not think that these teams would be 10th and 11th. To be honest, I think I might have predicted Chelsea 5th and Newcastle 6th. So very much off from what most people thought they would be. Of course, Newcastle have suffered injuries, but so has so many other teams. And Chelsea just seem to not be getting it completely right. They're looking pretty decent, but it just doesn't fall for them. But good for them. They do win this game 3-2 at home. Chelsea do score early. Gusto with the ball on the right, plays a ball into the box. Shaq clears it, but not very far, as it falls to Cole Palmer on the edge of the box. He fires it at goal, and Jackson gets the smallest touch on it and just guides it into the corner, adds that little bit more pace on it and makes the goalkeeper kind of hesitate a little bit, and it found its way into the back of the net. If Jackson didn't get that touch on it, Dubravka probably would have saved Palmer's shot, but with Jackson's little bit added and big fortune for Jackson, he gets the goal and puts him 1-0 up early on. In the 42nd minute, Isaac gets the ball from Bruno Guimarães on the edge of the box and just makes it look so easy. He takes a little touch inside and curls it into the corner, and absolute striker's finish. Like I said, he made it look so easy and so much skill to do that, to put it into the bottom corner, and makes it 1-1 at half time. Into the 57th minute, Mr. Ice Cold, Cole Palmer, receives the ball at the top of the box, takes a touch inside and laces it bottom corner. What a finish. Puts so much power on it and gives Chelsea the lead 2-1. But straight from that kickoff, Chelsea get it back and Sterling gets the ball running in on goal, has Palmer to the right but goes all alone. Keeper comes out, Sterling holds it up for a bit, then fires it at goal past the keeper, but Dan Byrne is on the line to block it. Sterling definitely should have played the easy ball to Cole Palmer, who is running on his right, because I reckon that would have been a guaranteed goal if Palmer received the ball, but Sterling, bit greedy, goes by himself and could have extended the lead in this massive game. And you would think a player like Sterling, so experienced, would play the pass to Palmer, but he doesn't, and it's still 2-1. But luckily for Sterling, Chelsea get a third goal. Jackson plays Gallagher in the middle, and the player who just came on, Mudryk, sprints through and pretty much steals it off Gallagher. Megs Shah then fakes the keeper to go around him and put it into an empty net. A bit of brilliance from Mudryk and finally seeing some of his talent that he was showing when he was playing in Ukraine and showing why Chelsea bought him for so much money. Right at the end of the game, Newcastle get a consolation prize. Jacob Murphy turns past Cucurella, takes a touch and absolutely blasts it into the goal. What a finish. The amount of power he put on it is crazy. And the fact he didn't blaze it over the crossbar just shows how good his technique is. What a finish. So the game finishes 3-2 to Chelsea at home. The 3 points put Chelsea only 1 point behind Newcastle. What a game from them, and they definitely deserve the win. Now, for the rest of the games for this game week, I will do it like I did last episode. So, running through the rest of the games, just talk about the result, the goal scorers, and do I think that's a fair result, who they've got in the next game week. Bit shorter, as of course, talked a lot about the City-Liverpool game and a bit Arsenal, Brentford, and Chelsea-Newcastle. So, Bournemouth 2, Sheffield United 2. Goal scorers in this game, Sheffield United getting the first two goals. Hammer in the 27th minute and Robinson in the 64th. Bournemouth then do crawl back to make it 2-2 with Uatara in the 74th minute and Unal in the 91st. A big result for Sheffield United at Bournemouth ground to get even a point in that game. Massive for him. Of course, they did let their lead slip and Bournemouth scrape a point back. But I think if you asked any Sheffield United fan, would you take a draw in this match before it kicked off? I believe every single one of them would have said yes, definitely. But of course, with them having the 2-0 lead and then letting it slip late, you think, oh, they could have maybe hold on, get the 3 points because the points for them, so valuable. They're at the bottom of the table, tied in last place with Burnley, but have a bit of a worse difference on 14 points. 7 points away from Luton, and you just think if they wanted any chance of survival, they had to win this game. But a draw, still a good result for them. I am fuming though. In the 15th minute, Dominic Solanke took a penalty. He stood up to take the penalty, but slipped at the vital moment and sent it over the crossbar. Very unlucky and got him in my FPL team. Captain him. Of course, he's got a double game week. And oh, a fat donut in FPL in terms of points, but a miss that proved to be very crucial for Bournemouth. Of course, Bournemouth, very safe, and I do not see them being relegated at all. But if they can move up any more spots, that proves so costly for the club because, of course, get more money the higher you finish to pay players, staff, and even getting in new players. Any points are crucial. Bournemouth's next game is against Luton at home. So hopefully they can bounce back and get back to winning ways. Should be an interesting one that. So good result for Sheffield and the points are shared. Bournemouth 2, Sheffield 2. Manchester United 2, Everton 0 at Old Trafford. Two penalties look to secure Man United the win and get the 3 points for them. Bruno Fernandes ending his goal drought and finally on the scoring sheet in the 12th minute. And Rashford takes the second penalty they get in the 36th minute. Very good by Man United. I thought that's something they always do pretty well is whenever they get a penalty, they give it to the right player. And not just in terms of who will finish it, but who kind of needs a goal. to boost their confidence, and Fernandes definitely needs one. And of course, he's Man United's number one penalty taker, then giving the second penalty to Rashford, beautifully played by them. But another game where Everton are unlucky to get anything from it. Overall, I thought they played pretty well, very good in the counter-attack, and the scoreline 2-0 to Man U definitely doesn't tell the story. Seems to be a pretty frequent issue for Everton, them unable to score goals with their chances. So they do need that big striker, or even for Calvert-Lewin to step up, as he hasn't been very good this season, to be honest. Of course, being injured for a fair bit of it, but now back, didn't do a lot. Of course, Beto did start this game, someone who does have the talent just like Calvert-Lewin, but again, can't finish his chances. With that win for Man United, they now move 4 points clear of West Ham in sixth and only 6 points behind Tottenham in fifth place. However, for Everton, they're only 4 points above the relegation zone and very well could be going down. I don't personally see them going down, but if they continue to not finish their chances, they very well could be. So overall, good result for Man United. Didn't play the best, but got the win, got the clean sheet, and they will happily move into the next game, which of course is against Liverpool in the FA Cup. Of course, there's going to be a podcast on that one because it is going to be a ripper game, that's for sure. Liverpool will win, but should be slightly close, I guess, but not really. For Everton, their next game is against Bournemouth. Could be a good chance for them to get some points in that game, but we will see how that goes. Crystal Palace 1 and Luton Town 1. Mateta scored in the 11th minute and Luton equalised with the last kick of the game, Woodrow in the 96th minute. Disappointing for Crystal Palace, that's for sure. Being ahead in pretty much the whole game and let it slip right at the end. But goodbye Luton to keep hanging in there and keep pushing for a late minute equaliser, which they do of course get. Something similar to Everton though, Crystal Palace unable to finish their chances. 21 shots and only 4 on target compared to Luton's 8 shots and 2 on target. So you do have to say Palace was a bit wasteful in this game, which caused them to only get the 1 point. But a game where you definitely think Palace should win at home. Of course, Luton being in very good form at the moment. The scoreline and the points they have gotten doesn't really show that, but they've been pushing teams up until the last minute of games and giving them a good hard battle, and just shows it's finally paying off with their late minute equaliser. With Luton's win, they are only now 3 points away from getting out of the relegation zone. Crystal Palace, however, find themselves in 14th place with 29 points, 3 above Brentford in 15th, and 6 below Bournemouth. Like I said before, Luton do versus Bournemouth at the Vitality Stadium, so should be a good game that one, but it's going to be tough for them to get points from Bournemouth, but definitely doable. Crystal Palace, however, versus Nottingham Forest next in a very big game for both teams. Of course, Nottingham Forest in 17th, only 3 points above Luton. If they win that game, they'll only be 2 points behind Palace. So a big game next for Palace. Hopefully, they can take some of the momentum from that game, as they did play pretty well. It was just the final product. Wolves 2, Fulham 1. Wolves getting the first 2 goals of the game. Ike Nouri in the 52nd minute and Cairney in the 67th minute scoring an own goal. Awobi gets a consolation prize at the end of the game in the 98th minute. And you've got to say again, another team unlucky to even get a point from the game, as had so many chances, especially in that first half, and was only able to take one of them. They had 23 shots, 7 on target to Wolves, 8 shots and 3 on target. So overall, in my opinion, I did think Wolves were the better side, but Wolves capitalised on the chances they got. Very good counter-attacking, so quick in the attack. But not good news for Wolves. Of course, Hwang Hee-chan and Matias Cunha is out due to injury, but Pedro Neto, right before halftime, did get subbed off due to injury. And you've got to say, if Neto is out for a couple weeks, Wolves are going to look very scarce going in the attack as all their big scorers out. But hopefully for him, it's not too crucial and he can play next game. But Wolves, very good, doing very well under Gary O'Neill, taking their chances and sitting ninth place, only 2 points behind West Ham in seventh. That is a bit mental if you think about it, how well Wolves have done this season. And you've got to take into account, near the start of the season, they had so many chances go the wrong way and are one of the teams who have been robbed the most from VAR. So very well from them and just showing they will continue fighting no matter what. Fulham though, unlucky for them and they stay in 12th place. Big game this one. Aston Villa 0, Tottenham 4. Goal scorers in this game, Maddison in the 50th minute, Brennan Johnson in the 53rd, Son in the 91st and Timo Werner in the 94th. Very good result for Spurs at Villa's ground. No one scoring in the first half, all the goals in the second. And of course, Tottenham starting well to get two early goals. But then John McGinn receives a red card in the 65th minute, giving Villa very little chance to come back into this game. This game though, very limited amount of shots, a lot more hold on the ball possession than end-to-end game really, with Villa having 10 shots, only one on target, and Tottenham having 9 shots, 5 of them being on target. So that is what you want from a team, being clinical, 5 shots on target, 4 goals. Definitely a deserved red card for John McGinn. Absolutely kicks the legs of Udogie, the player running in, and gave no chance for Villa back into the game. And like I said, Tottenham finish off the game strong. 2 goals in time added on. And a big clash this one was, of course, 4th v 5th. With the 3 points, Tottenham now move just 2 points behind Aston Villa. So a very good race for this last Champions League spot. Hopefully though for Aston Villa, they can bounce back against Ajax in the Europa Conference League at home. They played the first leg over in the Netherlands and it ended 0-0. So hopefully at home, they can find the goals to give them the win and move them into the quarterfinals. For Tottenham's next game, as I said, against Fulham. So you do think it is going to be a win for Tottenham, but I don't think people will realise how close the game will be. Both good teams and on their day, very, very good. And if Tottenham do win the game against Fulham, they will move 1 point ahead of Aston Villa in 4th spot as they do have a game in hand. Good result for Ange Postecoglou and his men, hoping to continue that into the rest of the season. Brighton 1, Nottingham Forest 0. A result that you do expect, to be honest. Brighton at home against Forest, you do think they get the 3 points, which they do in the end, but they do make it a pretty close battle, with only the one goal being an own goal by Omar Bamadele in the 29th minute. It was a close game though, both teams fighting very hard, but Forest just unable to find a finish. Same with Brighton, only goal becoming an own goal, as it very well could have been a 0-0 game. Only 10 shots by Brighton, 9 from Forest. But the main thing is, Brighton get the job done and keep themselves in 8th place, just one spot away from some European competition, as that would definitely be their goal this season. For Forest though, having a very, very shaky season, they are now only 3 points above the relegation zone. Very possible that they could go down this season, and their next game being against Luton at Luton's ground, that will be a massive game. Of course, if Forest go there and beat them, they will be 6 points above the relegation zone, but if Luton beat them, depending on how many goals, they could overtake them on the same amount of points. So a very big game for Forest up next, and their manager will take some points from the game, as it wasn't a bad performance by them, but definitely hoping more in their next match. Absolute massive one. For Brighton's next game, they play Roma at home in the Europa League round of 16, and they are going to need a miracle to advance into the quarterfinals. They have a 4-goal deficit that they need to catch up and bring it back tomorrow in that game, as Roma absolutely played them off the park in Italy in the first leg. And it seems very, very unlikely for Brighton to come back. Yes, they might win the game 2-1, 3-0, something like that. But getting 4-0 to push it to extra time, I just don't see that happening. They are unbeaten in 13 home games now, but we'll probably not get 4. West Ham 2, Burnley 2. The last game of the match week that I'm speaking on. Burnley get themselves a 2-goal lead in the first half at the London Stadium. Fofana scoring in the 11th minute and Mavropanos scoring an own goal in the 45th minute. But the second half, West Ham come out firing. Lucas Paqueta scoring in the 46th minute. The perfect start for West Ham, but they just can't build on it. And they just get the late minute equaliser with Danny Ings scoring in the 91st minute. Not what West Ham wanted or expected, as they are in 7th place. They have 29 more points than Burnley this season, but the points are shared. Very good start by Burnley, and it does show that the way Kompany wants them to play, it does work on occasions, but being consistent at it is what they have failed to do and finishing their chances and even holding out games, as West Ham come back in the second half to rescue a point for them. West Ham's next game is against Freiburg at home. Freiburg have a 1-0 lead coming into it, but West Ham at home, you do think they will turn the tides and either win the game by 2 in normal time or take it to extra time winning it there. That's my thoughts anyway, because I do believe they're the better team. Massive game for them in the Europa League. Of course, last season did very well in the European competition in the Europa Conference League, winning it. Now in the Europa League, hoping to get through to the quarterfinal stage. For Burnley's next game, they play Brentford at home. And you've got to say, if they want to have any chance of survival, they have to win against Brentford. Brentford only 5 points above the relegation zone, but sadly for Burnley, you just don't see that happening. Brentford looking quite decent lately. They haven't got the results to show for it though, but you would expect Brentford to win that game. And that is the Premier League summary. A big, big weekend for all teams. And next week's game week only has 4 to play, as most teams are in the FA Cup playing those games. So I haven't decided what I'll do in terms of the episode, but I reckon I'll have the Premier League summary along with some of the big FA Cup games like Liverpool versus Man United and talk about them just like the PL summary. Should be a banger. Blind ranking current in the squad players of Manchester City and Liverpool. If you don't know how this works, it is a list of top 5, 1 being the best, 5 being the worst. I randomly get a player, I have to put them either 1, 2, 3, 4 or 5, and I do not know who's coming next, and I have to try and order it as best as I can in the order I actually would put them in terms of who's the better player. So I have got a wheel up. It's got 41 players, 20 City players, 21 Liverpool players, and we'll rank them 1 to 5, and let's see who we get first. The man in form, Joe Gomez. Now, this is going to be tough because there's so many good players on the list to put him in a top 5. So I'm going to base this on current form, but also doing a little bit of overall, but mainly just current. So Gomez, top quality so far, but there is so many good players on this list. So to be quite honest, I am going to play this very safe at the start and put him in third place. Next up I have is Curtis Jones. Again, someone who has been so good this season. Of course, sadly injured at the moment, he could have been very useful in the game against City. And when he's played, absolute top quality. He is expected to return very soon. Maybe you could see him in the squad against Man United, but we'll see what happens. Now, do I think he's better than Gomez this season? Oh, very, very close. I think they've been very similar. But as of late, Gomez, of course, has started more games than him. And it would be a lot tougher call if Curtis Jones did not get injured. But sadly, he did. So I am going to put him fourth, just below Gomez. Again, quality players, all the players on the list are. Because to get into these massive squads, you've got to be. And in my opinion, Gomez this season, just a bit better than Curtis Jones. So I will put him fourth. Well, another Liverpool player, Virgil van Dijk. I wonder if we're even going to get a City player. At this point, it is more likely to get a City player because once I've got the names of Gomez and Jones, then I removed them. So I guess we're just lucky in a way. But Virgil van Dijk, I mean, I always talk so much about him, so highly about him, as he is the best centre back of all time, in my opinion, of course. When I say this, I do believe that is a right opinion. But of course, I never watched players like Maldini, Ramos in his prime, and you know, I'm very much just current players I think are the best, because really I've only been watching football in and out for about 2-3 years now, and only following it for about 4, so that's just my take on it. And yeah, I mean, it just shows Virgil van Dijk, my favorite player of all time, definitely an inspiration for me as I am a centre back. He's such a leader, the captain of the squad, and he's back to his prime. He is, really. I don't think anybody can argue that. In the City game, like I said before, so, so good. 10 out of 10 performance. And I am, of course, going to put him number one in this list. There's not a person at the moment in this City team or Liverpool team that is better than Virgil. And hopefully he stays for a fair few more seasons with us. What a player. Wow. This is just turning out to be a top 5 blind ranking of Liverpool players, because I have just got Alisson, of course, another player who is injured at the moment, has played most of the season though, 21 games, 7 clean sheets, and wow, what a goalkeeper, best goalkeeper in the world. And once he's back, he's just going to continue proving it. He saved us so many times in crucial games, and even ones where we could start really bad and it could end up not going well for us, but he's done his job phenomenally. One-on-one defending players, he's second to none when you compare it to other goalkeepers. The way he does it is just absolutely crazy. Such a massive player and a big, big out for us. But of course, like I've said, Kelleher has stepped up phenomenally in his place. And with this, I'm going to have to put Alisson in second place. It is close between him and Gomez, but our number one goalkeeper is so good and easily best keeper in the world for me. Although Gomez now playing more games than Alisson, of course, obviously because Alisson is injured. In a couple weeks, you could say that Gomez this season has been better than Ali, but at the moment, you've got to say he's better. And of course, not better than Van Dijk in my opinion. That's why he has got a suitable and deserved second place. Now, our last player, will we get a City player? And it is, oh no, we have gotten Mo Salah. Wow, this really is just a Liverpool list. And with only the 5th spot left, Salah has got to go there. And that, to be honest, quite frankly, mucks up the whole list. Of course, another player who has been injured, he's slowly coming back, did play half an hour in the game against City. So many seasons, he is performing at an exceptional level at the moment. He has been doing. He has missed a few games though due to his injury that he got in the AFCON for Egypt and then coming back a little bit too soon, you could say, and pulling it again. But he's gotten 24 goals and assists. Only player in the Premier League to have more goal contributions than him is Ollie Watkins with 26. So that just tells what you need to know. And another exceptional season from him. But sadly, I've only got the fifth spot left, so it's going to have to be Salah there. So overall, it makes my list. First, Van Dijk. Second, Alisson. Third, Gomez. Fourth, Curtis Jones. And fifth, Mo Salah. And again, I want to preference this by saying I did have 20 Manchester City players on this wheel and 21 Liverpool players. So it really was just luck of the draw that I did get all Liverpool players. Not the worst list in the world. Of course, Salah at fifth is wrong. If I were to choose it and it wasn't a blind ranking, I reckon Salah would slot in second, Alisson would go down, Gomez go down, and Curtis Jones go down one. And since we did just get five Liverpool players, I am going to speed through another one. Hopefully, we get some more City players this dive. Second blind ranking for today, because hopefully we get some more City and Liverpool players to compare. But our first player in this new top five blind ranking is Mateo Kovacic. Now, of course, is a bench player for City for the most part. Has played a bit though with De Bruyne being injured for pretty much the whole start of the season. But overall, with all the players we've got, I am going to put him in fourth. There's a lot of top quality players that I do think are better than him. Our second player we have is Endo, a top quality CDM. What a player he is turning out to be. Like I said early on, he found his rhythm and he's been so solid. And that is why he has started for the past fair few weeks by now. Do I think Endo is better than Kovacic? Of course I do. It's just a case whether I put him third or second because he is really, really good. There is a shout for second place. But like I said with Kovacic, so many quality players on the list. I am going to put him in third place. I suppose this is kind of cheating, the blind ranking. Like, I don't know who's coming next, but I do know what the list of players is. But again, I suppose there's no other way to do it where I don't know the players because I'm doing current Manchester City and Liverpool players that usually in the squad. So, but I will put Endo in third place. Oscar Bob. Good to see we aren't just getting Liverpool players this time. This is what I wanted the first time. A range of players from both teams. Oscar Bob, of course, young talent. He has only made 9 appearances in the Premier League this season, gotten a goal and assist. So he will go in 5th place for me, but like I said, top quality talent with so much potential. Of course, such a hard squad to break into, and getting appearances for him is unreal in this City team. So good on him, but definitely not better than Endo or Kovacic at this moment in time. Our penultimate player, which the second last player we have got, is Erling Haaland. The man who did ghost in the game absolutely went missing. I think people are still trying to find him in Van Dijk's pocket somewhere. They haven't found him yet. But overall, he is top quality talent. What a player. Last season in the Premier League, getting the new Golden Boot record. Just wow, really. A lot of the goals are tap-ins, but you're in the position nonetheless, and you can't take it away from him. A goal is a goal. Absolutely smashing it last season, and the start of this season, he did smash it. But he did get injured, and of course, had a fair bit of time off to recover, and he's come back and hasn't really found his rhythm again, and just hasn't been as good as he usually is. But saying that, he's still gotten 23 goals and assists. He's leading the Golden Boot race with 18 goals. So still a good season, but just some flaws recently. When you have such high standards as he does receive a lot of criticism with chances that he misses. So I only have first and second left, so he's gonna go first. Of course, like I said, the stats don't lie. He is top quality, still is coming back from an injury, so still hasn't found his rhythm though, but overall quality player. So that then means our last player has to be in the second position, and it is Phil Foden, a man who is on fire at the moment. This season, he has gotten himself 18 goals and assists in the City team exceptionally well. Of course, recently been very big of a standout, and putting him in second place, I don't mind that, to be honest. I don't mind Haaland being above Foden. If I did have the choice, I probably would have put Foden above Haaland just because currently Foden on fire and, like I said, Haaland getting back into his stride. But I'd say overall, that list is pretty darn good. A bit better than the first one because, of course, the first ranking, Salah in fifth, definitely ruined it for me. But this one, a lot better with Haaland number one, Phil Foden second, Endo third, fourth Kovacic, and fifth Oscar Bob. So only thing I said that I would change, Foden above Haaland, switch him around. But it doesn't mind me at all. Very close battle between them. And this time, four City players and one Liverpool player. So not a clean sweep like last one, but at least it's got one other person. And with that blind ranking finish, that is the end of the episode. Hope you've enjoyed it. A lot to talk about. Of course, one of the biggest games of the season, Liverpool versus City. So if you have enjoyed me waffling on this episode, give me a follow, give it a like, whatever you can do to support the pod would be greatly appreciated. Share it to a mate or a person you think might enjoy it. And with that being said, I will see you guys in the next episode of Backline.